Welcome to Luxuries for Your Soul with Alexis Kletchian and Lauren Gholt. Every episode is a look at life through the lens of luxury, whether it's the dismantling of belief systems, pursuing our passions, or standing in our truth. We approach each conversation with genuine curiosity of what it means to have a well-lived life. Today's episode casts a wide net, covering topics like sobriety, love, compassion, family, and strength in community. Julie Armstrong is a survivor, and at the time of this conversation, 18 years sober. Her belief is, when you take the time to care for yourself, you can then care for others. But she didn't arrive here without embracing her own imperfections and chapters of struggle through psych ward visits and program accountability to remain sober through the toughest transitions of her life. Fitness has always been paramount to her existence. From personal training to nutritionist, Julie brings women together in beautiful settings through the Hope Experience to connect with themselves and each other through yoga, meditation, multimodality workshops and retreats, both local and international. Most notably, she also hosts Emerging Teens through self-esteem and empowerment workshops to discuss feelings, creativity, connections, and of course, body movement. If you are on the South Shore of Boston and looking for a safe haven community, you can connect with the Hope Experience and attend one of their many purpose-led events. Or you can tune into the Hope Experience podcast, where Julie and her guests explore the depths of their struggles and remarkable triumphs on their journey of self-discovery. And a little housekeeping here. Before we introduce Julie, please subscribe or follow this podcast and leave us a 5-star review. It's the best way to help us make an impact by growing our listenership and attracting new guests so you can continue receiving all the luxuries for your soul. Enjoy this episode with my friend Julie Armstrong of the Hope Experience.
If someone were to ask you what the Hope Experience is, how would you define it?
The Hope Experience is something I created after living a life of growth. I have worked with women for almost 20 years, and I've worked with over a thousand women. And I realized with training these women, like, they need more. They need time away to connect with themselves and to connect with other women. And, you know, I got sober 18 years ago. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And through this time, I have grown so much. I attended spiritual retreats, fitness retreats. And so for the past decade, I have wanted to, you know, start a retreat business. There was a lot of criteria that I wanted to cover. I wanted it to be in beautiful spaces. I wanted everybody to be able to come, even people who couldn't afford it. So I do a few spots per retreat or workshop where people who can't afford it can come. And I just wanted to create a space in a community where women of all kinds, all ages, can come together and support each other and take care of themselves. So when they leave me and my other wellness practitioners, they feel 100% better. Although they get thrown to the wolves right away, they know how they felt at that time, and I try and teach them the tools to take it with them so that when they're struggling or they have hard things going on, they can take the time for themselves to meditate, to move their body, to rest, to talk to somebody, tell them their problems.
It's incredible.
But I also thrive off being in a group, so I need both. And I'm a total observer. So I have observed what women need, what girls need. And I know from my own experience what I have needed. And I just told myself I want to give back. So that was how it was created. And it was pretty powerful when I came to and finally had the courage to do it. Life is hard. Hectic.
Yeah.
Women take care of a lot of things. Children, businesses. And I wanted to be able to help women do that.
So you said that you've experienced spiritual retreats. And, you know, before we go on to, you know, your history of depression or alcoholism. Talk to us about your spiritual awakening. What have you experienced and what do you include in your retreats?
So for me, I mean, I've had a few spiritual awakenings. As I grow, I feel like, you know, I reach different levels, but the most impactful one that I had was in 2005. And I was in a psychiatric ward for the second time at 26 years old. And my childhood priest was sent to me by my parents to come in and talk to me and just to tell me how much I'm loved. Because at that point, you know, this was it. I needed some hope. I needed to know that I was loved and I needed to be taught how to love myself again. And while I was laying in this bed, and I'm telling you, this psych ward, I went to it twice. And 10 years prior, alcoholism. The first time I went was nine of my freshman year. The nurses didn't think I belonged there. But I did belong there. I did. I mean, that is part of my story. And I don't, like, cared about me so much. And they're so amazing that, like, that's at the time what they thought I needed. And I actually did, because I was shown where I did not want to get to. There were people that were drug addicts and alcoholics that were, it changed their whole chemical, you know, function. I was young. I wasn't the youngest in there by like 20, 30 years. I had crack addicts in there. I had people who were like screaming. I had a man come into my room. I thought he was going to kill me. Like, I had stuff happen in there that I've actually barely ever talked about that. But like, it was scary, but it scared me into knowing that's not where I wanted to end up again.
Well, you're lucky.
I am.
That you could be that fortified at that age and say, okay, this is a glimpse at the path I'm headed down, instead of looking at it as a punishment.
Yes, I didn't look at it that way. I wanted to get well. I did not want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. And I knew there was part of me, I was a very confident child. So like, I knew there was a better life for me. And I knew I deserved a better life and I wanted one. So it was either death for me or it was get your shit together and let's do this. And I was fortunate that I took, you know, let's get it together and let's go. Let's live a good life.
How long were you in there the first time?
Both times I was in there for about, first time I think it was 7 days. Second time was like almost 9 days. And by the end, I was like, get me out of here.
I mean, yeah,
it was tough. I mean, I wasn't on medication in there. I was like the only one that was not walking in a trance. I refused everything and I felt my feelings and I did what I had to do and what they suggested to me in there. My family came in, close friends came to visit me during the times they could. And they were like, holy crap. But I was so loved and that helped, you know, and I knew that.
That's so important. How much time passed between the visits, your brief stints there?
I was 18 and then I was 26. And I had a lot of wonderful things happen in between that.
Well, what caused you to go back? What was the catalyst, the breaking point?
It's a progressive disease. So if you don't stop and you are somebody that has addiction tendencies, and again, I was like, I was not well when I left at 18. When I walked out of that, you know, hospital, my idea was to not drink. But I went to the Vineyard. I worked, you know, summers on the Vineyard. And like, it was a party scene there. Because it was almost like college again in the summer. I lasted a week. And then I started drinking again. And then, you know, it just from there. So I would have like really high highs and success because I am a hustler. Even in my like days of like drinking so much, I love to hustle. I love to work. I love to make money and I like to be successful. However, I'd get this far and then it would increase and like other substances creeped in as well, more because I was under the influence of alcohol. But then I would like mentally drop, you know, I'd be like, oh my God, I'd hit a wall. And then I'd try again and nothing was working. You know, it just wasn't working.
What was your drink?
I was going to say that. No, that's okay.
My drink. I had a few. I was like, it's so funny because I have two older brothers who were like beer drinkers and like, you know, so I was always around beer. So I liked beer. I mean, I loved wine as I got a little bit into more into my 20s.
Oh, it's brutal.
And then I loved vodka. This was not good for me. Vodka and soda water. I drank that. And that was like, I learned quickly that I couldn't handle that. Because I, even though I could drink like a guy, or what they say, like I could drink a lot, like I wanted to, I mean, there were times I was out of my mind, but like I wanted to kind of like fly under the radar at times too. But it was hard for me to keep that level of flying under the radar, just because it increased so much my drinking, you know.
So you were drinking not just socially, it was, you know.
I was a binge drinker. So yes, I drank socially, but I was also at one point, in, once I, you know, was done with school, I worked in the restaurant business, corporate world. And so I was able to work nights. I was able to drink the way I wanted to. Everybody in the restaurant business was drinking like that. I could hustle and work really hard. So I felt good that I was actually, you know, making money and working, but I was able to drink the way that I wanted to. And it was so unhealthy. It just was. It's terrible for me.
You wanted to drink the way that you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like?
I wanted to black out. I wanted to forget. I didn't want to feel. Yep. So every time I would start to drink, I would not be able to stop. I could go days or weeks without it, which, you know, towards the end I couldn't. But that's what I show you. The progression of the disease is so strong when it gets a hold of you.
What didn't you want to feel?
I had a hole in my soul and I don't know why. I don't know. I am a huge empath. Huge. And I felt everybody's feelings. And as a child, I felt everyone's energy and feelings so much. And I just wanted everyone so happy. And I wanted people to feel good. And it sometimes it took away from me to make everybody else happy. And again, I was a go-getter. I mean, I was a great athlete. I worked really hard in so many things. So I was a high achiever. Nobody put pressure on me. I had, like I said, I had wonderful parents. I put it on myself.
Yeah.
And that chips away at you when you put so much pressure on yourself to be the best. It really does. I mean, it was a catalyst of, it added fuel to my alcoholism and depression.
How old were you the first time you had a drink?
15.
Okay.
And I knew right away because I was warned by my family that there was so much alcoholism on both sides that my mom was so aware. She's like so fast forward back in the 80s and 90s. Like she knew about mental illness. She knew she was a nurse, but she knew about alcoholism. Like she warned us at a young age. And I was like, oh no, I like this way too much. So it was always a, like a seed that had been planted. Thank God, because she basically saved my life by planting that seed with me, because I was always aware of it.
Were you like, that won't be me? I'm strong enough. I'm loved enough. I'll come out on the other side.
You don't really think that when you're in it.
Okay.
Right? Like it's funny. When I was taking a shower, I was thinking about this and I was thinking not about what I was going to say, but like different things that happen in my life. And I'm going to jump forward if you don't mind just for a minute, because this was a really crucial part of me coming to acceptance and not being denial anymore about my alcoholism. Is I had called off, this is like, must have been maybe 4 months before I got sober. I'd called off a wedding to a man I was engaged to. Best thing for both of us. But it like was a crushing, crushing time in my life where my alcoholism took over. This is, I started drinking alone on a daily basis the last 4 months. And I remember taking a Corona. I was on my at my parents' house on the vineyard and taking a Corona out and nobody was around. And I just started guzzling it. A drop go through my entire body and almost take away instantly the angst that I had. And I said to myself, this needs to end. This is destroying me. Even though it's taking away that pain a little bit right now, I know that this is an issue. And that was like, I remember nailing on their kitchen floor and just being like, oh my goodness, this is where I am. Like what? So, and then I came to my bottom pretty soon after that because I still continued for 4 months.
Did he drink with you?
Who, my ex? Yes, he was a very high achieving alcoholic. He's sober now. Yep. we actually, I mean, great relationship if I see him. Like, he's awesome. He's doing well, very well, thank God. But yes, we were not a match made in heaven, even though we were both, like, you know, working and doing our thing. Like, not good. Bad match.
Yeah.
But
so you hit bottom, and then did you take the initiative to go to rehab, or did your parents help with that, or how did that work?
So I just, my last stint was in that last psych ward. And in that psych ward, I was introduced to an 80-year-old woman who came in to talk to people. She was 50 years sober, and she was around my age when she got sober. And she told her story to me. And even though she was 80, I identified with every feeling that she had as an active alcoholic. And I wanted what she had. I wanted that peace, that serenity, that family. She was a mother, she was a grandmother, and she just had this aura around her, and I will never forget her, because she is what literally, when I walked out the door, what she had told me and how she made me feel gave me more motivation to go out and do what I needed to do to build a good life, which is pretty cool. I'll never forget her.
What was her name?
Aggie.
Aggie.
Agnes. Agnes.
What an angel, Aggie.
I know. It was pretty amazing. I mean, I can get emotional just thinking about it. There's so many emotions tied to it all these years later.
Right. What do you have to say for people who say that alcoholism isn't a disease, it's a choice?
I don't judge what anyone says. I don't really care. I don't. I just want people happy and well.
Yeah.
I don't really care how they do it, what they think. I know what I feel, and I don't judge what anyone else does or say, because if I do, then that just makes me not well. It just, do you. I'm good over here working on myself and trying to be a good person. That's it.
That's empowering.
I feel it. I feel it. I'm so grateful, you guys. Like, I should have been dead, no doubt. And I would have, some way or another.
Yeah.
But I knew there was more for me.
So you have a family now?
I do.
You are still married, right?
Yeah. It's tough times right now.
Okay.
Jeff and I have been married for 14 years. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome guy. But yeah, so we're separated, which is very shocking to me. So this year has been a very difficult year. But very difficult. It's probably been the worst year of my life, which is interesting, right? Because I've been through hell.
Wow.
And this has been the hardest.
Mm-hmm. Do you think because so many good things are happening to you and you're helping so many other people get to the next phase of their life and you're finding true happiness and peace, that then now this is falling away?
I don't understand why things happen in life, and I try not to figure it out. Because people have their own stuff going on. All I know is I love my family. I love him. I love my children. And I just want to be a good mom, to raise really good children, and to be a good person. And, you know, again, the whole being empathetic, like, I hate throwing that out all the time. But this year, I used to not even say it, but this year, really realizing, like, because again, I'm growing on a daily basis. And I've been, when things get tough for me, I dig deep. I dig deep. I have to, because if I don't, then I could lose myself. And what I've realized is, it's like, I can only be so much to everybody, right? And I have to take care of myself. And that's what I'm doing. And I pray for positive outcomes. And that's it. But life's hard. It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's sad sometimes. But as long as I stay sober, I can get through anything.
I was going to ask you how your marriage survived sobriety.
Yeah. We met sober.
Is he sober?
That's how I met him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
That's how we met. So, I mean.
And so the kids, how do we talk to the kids about drinking, mental health, watching mom work, pick herself up, keep, you know, reigniting her own creativity and just being a pillar of strength? What does that look like in your household?
That is my number one.
Mm-hmm.
I love my children. We all do, right? But I know what they could be up against in life. And during the pandemic, when I couldn't go to meetings, like outside in person, everything went to Zoom. So like my husband and I would have Zoom meetings on, recovery meetings. And the time, you know, my kids were, you know, they're 12 and 7, so what? 8 and 6. But my daughter's me. So she is like super uber intuitive, like even probably more than me. It's kind of scary and very aware. I mean, at 2, she was like aware of people. And like, she's stronger than me at that age. She noticed, she started watching, you know, we'd let her in. And then finally, she's like, you don't drink. You guys don't drink. I'm like, you're right. We don't. She's like, some of our relatives do. And I'm like, yeah, some people can. I'm like, we can't. And so they know, and they totally know now. And like, I still do Zoom meetings. I go out, you know, once, at least once a week to an in-person, but like life's really busy. So I have it on at 7:30 most nights, and they appreciate it. They're cool. I mean, it's a peaceful house, even though, you know, may not be all the time, but it is for the most part. We've created a safe, peaceful home because of that. And the older they get, we'll talk more, but they're 12 and 10 and just living their lives. So I do get a little nervous, but I, you know, my mom told me, don't think about that yet. Enjoy where they are right now. You can think about that stuff as they get older, you know?
That's great that they see you do meetings. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's been cool.
How has fitness played a role in keeping you sober, and how did you find fitness?
Fitness has always been me, because I am, although I'm chill in a lot of ways as I age, I was a hyperactive child who like literally threw myself into movement to feel good. Because again, I started having anxiety at a young age, 10 years old, again, worried about people and places and things. And when I moved and when I danced and when I played soccer and basketball, I felt unstoppable. And that's when I felt my best. And even through my drinking, I still worked out all the time. I mean, I would be hungover working out like a psycho, but it exactly. It just makes me feel good. And I love it. I love the camaraderie of community in a class. I love helping people become their best selves and get strong and, you know, feel good. And like, because again, most of the things I teach are what I taught myself and learned from others and incorporate into my life that has made my life so much better. So why not help others learn that and feel that way too? So this is when I left the corporate world. I was in it for like, oh my gosh, 4 years. And I was like, all my bosses, like they liked me, but they were like, this isn't for you. I'm like, can we go for a walk at lunch? Like, can we, like, I couldn't sit at a desk, you guys. Like, I was like, this is torture. I just wanted to eat all day, drink water, or like go for a run. And I was living in the city at the time in the North End. And like, I remember just like leaving like work, like a corporate job, and like walking back to my apartment and be like, I have to go back there. And finally I got sober. And I literally threw myself back into school for fitness, and I opened my first business within 6 months. So I started entrepreneurship at 27 and a half, and loved it. Still love it. Love it. I don't feel like it's a job.
I loved working out with you.
We had fun.
We did. We had fun. Mm-hmm. I think Instagram was brand new. Mm-hmm. When we started working
it
out.
It was.
And I was like, I'll get on
it. You hated it at first.
I know.
Didn't you hate it?
Hated it.
You hated it. That's why I laugh, because I remember you saying like how much you hated like all of that. I mean, I remember I had some great conversations with you. I really learned who you were. So it's funny. Your podcast is my favorite. So you guys know that. I listen to it. Like when it comes on, I'm like, yes, new episode. But like, I literally know your personality and remember it. So it's so funny to see the difference between you two. I love it. It's such a great.
Thank you.
No, it's amazing. It's so good.
I'm over here trying to picture Alexis going for a run and it's making me giggle.
Yeah.
I know.
That was towards the end, but we did. We did. Yep.
Well, when you're around Julie, you're just like, okay, I'm in, yeah, I'm with you. And then afterwards, oh, I can't do that without her. You know, she's like your battery pack.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yes. I try to exert energy into people.
That's incredible that you put your first gym together. I mean, to do all of that so quickly. I mean, 6 months, that's...
You guys, I am like, if I put my mind... So it's so funny because I got one job as a trainer for a few months and I was like, no way. Like, no way. It's like, I'm not going to make any money. They are not letting me be creative. Mm. And I know so much, like, let me do this. So I started having outdoor boot camps in like tons of locations on the South Shore. All my friends, I like put together, I would have like 30 people outdoors at boot camps. Like on, I would just drive my car around. I had a suitcase filled with weights. Like that was like, I forget what I even drove. Maybe it was like a Jetta at the time. And like, it was like dragging on the ground because I had so many weights in the back. And I saved all my money so I didn't have to take out a loan. And I opened my first space at like 27. And it was awesome. I mean, I didn't have kids yet. I worked my ass off. I worked like 13-hour days. I would train 13 people a day, back to back, back to back, and just hustled my butt off. And for many years, loved it. Still love it. But a lot of hustle went on.
You want to say something, Lauren? I was going to talk about Lyme disease.
You just have so much energy. I can feel it through.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Oh.
Do you ever wake up without this level of energy? And if so, do you, like, what's your secret for those days?
Not often. Like I said, I am great. Being grateful is like my biggest, I'm so grateful. And I write it down every single day in the morning when I wake up. 3 to 5 things I'm grateful for. Saturday, I just talked about, I just did a podcast that went live today and it was about living a life of joy in recovery, no matter what life throws at you. And Saturday, I had the most depressing day I've had in 18 years because of my life right now. And sad as hell. I mean, I told my husband, like, every step I took was like difficult. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. And it took me everything in my power. I actually laid in bed, which I've been trying to rest a little more because I am so energetic. Like, you know, I'm 46, like, chill out, like, learn to relax a little bit more. And so that's what I did for myself on Saturday. I laid in my bed and the kids would come in and be like, how are you? I'm good. Like, it was a freezing day here. Nobody had anything going on until we had to go to basketball. And I allowed myself to feel my feelings where years and years ago, I would drink them away. Mm. But it was a little scary for me because I was very sad, very, very sad. And I did what I had to do, what I was taught. And I went to a self-help meeting and I showered and I got myself looking, you know, better than I had looked earlier that day. And, you know, I went to the basketball games. I did everything I was supposed to do instead of not doing that. And then I woke up Sunday morning like a new person and every day has been great since. So like, I give myself grace to feel my feelings because it's still not easy for me. And I'm going through a lot. I'm going to be honest, and it's hard, but I'm very happy most of the time, no matter what. So I've trained myself somehow. I don't know.
Do you have a mantra right now that helps you on those days?
Just to walk through my fears. My word, intentional word, is fearlessness. I am fearful of so many things right now. Again, more about everybody else's feelings. And that's really hard to be in that position when you love people and you worry about them. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a point in your life, hard character defect, but good character too. I mean, I am the epitome of that. It's like, sucks. Like, I don't make New Year's resolutions, but every year my people laugh at me because they're like, every year my thing is to put up more boundaries and to be like, boo you. That's really hard for me. I just want everyone happy.
Are you a people pleaser?
Yes. I know, right? I have no problem doing that. That's the thing. I am getting better. I am getting better, but it takes me a lot of therapy, a lot of, I mean, I love therapy and I love, I do. I mean, I love it. My daughter loves therapy too. And she wouldn't mind me saying that. Just therapy. Yeah. Having a therapist. Yep.
Yeah.
Individual, couples, whatever it takes. I'm in. And like listening to other people, you know, I love helping others. That gets me out of my, it's hard.
No, I'm just thinking. I'm a people pleaser too. So I relate to a lot of what you're saying.
I'm definitely not.
My mother's not like a people that. Pleaser. I wish I had, I'm my dad, and I wish I love my dad. I'm glad I'm like him in so many ways, but I wish I had a little bit of Norma in me where she's like, screw you. Yeah, I don't. The older I get, I'll get a little bit more, but.
And what about your daughter? Does she have that?
Oh, yes. She is very, her and I are very similar, but she has more of my mom in her, where like she really stands up for herself. She's a little spitfire. And I want her to keep that because I was that until I wasn't. I was her until I let society not let me be. You're too confident.
What does that mean?
So like as a child, I was...
When people say society, I'm trying to understand that.
What I mean is community, people, parents, coaches that would tear you down at a young age or not let you be who you wanted to be, right? And I let that, I guess, the people pleaser in me. I allowed that to change who I was during adolescence a bit.
Influence.
I internalized a lot of it. I put up a front quite a bit. And the alcohol through 15 to 20 something allowed me to, you know, cover that, what I allowed people to take away from me. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Can you share a story of when someone tried to knock you down a peg or, you know, when you lost your confidence a little bit?
It's so funny. Yes. This came right to me and I have a funny story after it too, just because the teacher knows it was me. But so this was in high school and like high school, I went like from public school in eighth grade to private school in high school. And it was tough for me because like, my childhood friends, my high school friends are still my best friends. And so when I left my like elementary, middle school friends to go to this private school, it was such a hard adjustment for me. And like, I'm not great with transition. That's why what's going on in my life right now is really difficult. Like transition is tough for me. And I worked really hard in school until like I started drinking. And then like, I always did really well in school and I let, you know, drinking take some of that weight away from me. So I started drinking my sophomore year weekends and that started to like instantly, although I still excelled in sports because that was my outlet, school-wise, I started to feel not as smart because I wasn't listening. My focus was off. I was thinking about drinking, thinking about my boyfriend, thinking about going out, you know, on the weekends. And this one teacher who was nuts, she was terrible to me. And she just didn't like my being. And I was kind of quiet, like in classes, you know what I mean? It's not like I was like this loud person, but there was something she didn't like. And she told my mother, called because my mom was like, what? Like, you're being terrible in like a teacher conference. And that's what she told me. Her name was Miss King. And it was early night. It was 91, 92, 91. So when I got my license a year later, 2 years later, she lived across the street from one of my best guy friends down the street from my high school. We used to do lawn jobs on her lawn, except I tried to do it with a foot of snow and got stuck on her front lawn. She came outside, Julie Stanton, like, what are you doing? You know, so, I mean, but she made a profound effect on me. I was like, I'm going to get you. And yes, drinking was involved, which is bad, but she had, a few things like that, different coaches, you know, but again, it's growth. I'm glad things like that happened to me because it allows you, like, we need to get through tough stuff in life to become tough adults. And that's why I'm not pissed off that I was, you know, somebody who had to deal with addiction or, you know, depression. I'm fine. I'm grateful that I've gone through what I've gone through because I'm able to give back and I feel good about myself now and about my life, no matter what. So just have to stay grateful. It's my thing.
I mean, that's wonderful and good for you, but that teacher is a real asshole. That's terrible. Why be an educator if you're going to knock someone's confidence down like that?
Oh yeah. She's brutal.
Yeah, for sure.
She was not good at all. But that stuck with me. There's certain things like that I think just stick with people, you know, and that was one of them.
When you talk about, you've mentioned depression and sadness a few times. When we think about translating those emotions into words, what are the thoughts that pass through your mind when you observe them and make you aware, I'm feeling this? What is that?
It rocks my body. I am still 18 years into being, you know, sober and feelings still rock my body. That's why I meditate often. And I, you know, do the things I journal often. I, you know, affirm myself and others often because mm-hmm. it literally, feelings can take so much out of me. I remember as a kid laying in bed at night, and you know the alarm clocks and how they had like the way the numbers were, there was like little slashes. And I used to sit there and I'd be like having all these like thoughts of like my day and people and all these things. And I would sit there and just like count the things trying to fall asleep at night. And when I'm feeling sad about something and I'm laying in my bed as an adult, now I just pray, I meditate, I try to think of like my higher self, you know, I try and visualize things. So like I went from a kid, you know, teaching myself tools to relax myself of counting the numbers on an alarm clock to as an adult, you know, laying there and taking care of myself by visualizing wonderful things or praying or, you know, meditating and mm-hmm. not feel feelings. It's who I am. And I care so much about people and myself that like I'm proud of being a kind person, but I need to keep at the forefront that like, you know, it's okay for me to feel sad. It's okay for me to have, you know, Saturday afternoon depression because, you know, I know what to do to bounce back, but I'm not going to lie. It rocks me definitely at times.
So you're saying you take it second by second.
Oh my God. Yes. I literally live when things are hard. I always live day to day. But I live right now, minute to minute, hour to hour. It depends on the day. Mm-hmm. But I always say I try to keep my head where my feet are. Because if I'm looking ahead at like what the future is going to look like for me, or I look behind at, you know, what has transpired negatively, like a healthy space to be in, I need to just stay where I am and just be and be strong and be grateful and be a good person. That's just my, you know, that's what I want.
Anything you want to add, Lauren? Anything more about mental health?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Depression? Oh. Spiritual awakenings? Lauren, anything you want to divulge there? So when you got your diagnosis that you had Lyme disease, did that trigger anything for you? Did that set you back? How did it affect you? Yeah. Everyone has a different experience with Lyme.
I mean, honestly, I look back, I don't even know how many years ago it was now. It must have been 7. It rocked me. I got so sick. I thought I was dying. I'm actually like, I'm going to bring myself back there because it's been a while since I've thought about it, but everything hurt on me. I mean,
achy.
Oh, but not, it's like bizarre to even like, I can't even describe it. It wasn't even like it was achy. It was like my body was being eaten by my body. Like it was so painful. I had something called Herx's. So when I started treatment, you would get so sick. And I mean, neurologically, I had neurological Lyme. So like I had brain fog that you would not even believe. I mean, I would lay in bed and I still had to work during this time because I'm a big provider in my family too. And I had young kids. I had a business, you know, I still ran my fitness business at the time. And mm-hmm. I had to ask for help, which could be hard for me. Like I had some friends bringing meals over, like, you know, family, you know, bringing meals over. My husband was in, he is such an amazing supporter through like those type of things, like wonderful. But it was really hard. I went through 13 doctors, both the best hospitals. People set me up with the most renowned people to holistic practitioners. Every single wow. thing you can think of, I did until one day I was better. It was like hell on earth for a couple years.
Will it come back?
They say it can. I've had so. When I went, it kicked off 2 autoimmune diseases for me. So like then they thought I had MS. So I was being treated. So I went in for everything possible to find out if they said I had MS at first. Like we thought I had it. And I wasn't fully convinced I did. But my dad has, in his elderly age, it came on him, an autoimmune disease. So I have something very similar to him that only, you know, presents itself in about 1% of people in their like late 30s, 40s. It's usually people over 60. And with that comes other things. I get iritis or uveitis. That's another reason why they thought I have MS. So my left eye would go blind. I mean, I went blind, you know, probably 20 times over time for like a week, 2 weeks at a time. Sugar, if I ate sugar, my symptoms would get worse. So nutrition and diet has a lot to do with getting well. I would go for infusions, you know, constantly. I was on, at one point I went to this doctor, I was on such high doses of antibiotics, they shot it in my butt. My kids would go with me because at the time, like they were with me all the time, they were young, and they would shoot antibiotics into my butt. And it did help me get well, but it also like ruined a lot of other things for a while, physically for me. So, you know, the holistic stuff is really what helped me, the nutrition, cold cryotherapy, detoxing, you know, putting your feet in the, what do you call it? Detoxifying stuff. I did everything. Literally. It was tough and expensive.
Wow.
Those shots were not covered by insurance and it was $800 a week. So yeah, it was.
So that's stressful.
Oh my God. It was hell. It was literally hell.
During this time, did anybody question your sobriety?
No, I didn't even think about it either. No, I think they were so, because they know I'm such a physically healthy person that people knew I was sick. I mean, I looked at, I was passing out training people, the studio, like two mornings, I just like dropped to the ground and like got taken to the hospital. Yeah. I mean, I was, it was a really tough time. I don't think about that time. That's weird. I think more about like, it's almost like I blacked that out. I mean, it was hell. It was really tough. And I dug in, I learned so much about it. Like I was like researching and like, I've learned so much and been able to help. I mean, I used to give talks on it at conferences and, you know, different wellness things and try and help others. People still come to me for it because it's just so prominent around here.
Let me ask a dumb question. Was it from a tick?
Yes.
Or we don't know.
I had three. I had babesiosis, which is like a form of malaria. So I was on a malaria drug too, which kicked my butt. I had Lyme disease, and there was one more, I forget at this point, but there was three of them.
Wow.
It was bizarro. I felt like I was like literally
bizarro.
It was. I felt like I lived on like a different planet. Like it was so, maybe that's why I don't remember, because the brain fog, you guys, I remember getting into my car after work one time and I didn't know how to start my car. I was like,
oh my gosh,
what the hell am I? Like what? It was, yeah, it was no joke.
Yeah.
No joke.
You've been through a lot. And I think that it's amazing that you've made it.
Yes, I will make it.
You're one of the lucky ones.
I know. Oh my gosh. I know that there's so many people that don't. And like, that's why I am. That's why I knew there was a greater purpose for me. Like I knew it was like a switch, you guys. Like when I decided to like put down that drink and get sober and live a good life, it was like on. Like I'm so blessed that's why I think I'm happy even in tough times, because like I was so close to death. And I know that sounds so like dramatic, and I'm not drama, but like I was, and you know, I'm so glad I got like a second chance at life and to really live my passion and purpose in life. And I'm very grateful that I'm somebody that knows that.
Do you have anything to say for people who maybe aren't sure that there's something better waiting for them, that they aren't sure what their passion and their purpose is?
Keep growing. Keep learning about yourself. Keep educating yourself. And just don't sabotage. I know so many sabotagers that like...
Saboteurs.
Blow their life up. Saboteurs. Yeah. Saboteurs. Whatever, like they just can't, they don't allow themselves. And I get sad for them. And I'm somebody who like obviously mentors a lot of other women, but I more observe and listen. And sometimes being that to people can be a little frustrating internally, because I just want to shake them and be like, listen, this is like, you can do this. Like there's a better life for you. But you can't change their mind. You can be there to like be a sounding board and help support them. But like people have to do it themselves. And that's why some people never find it. You know, sometimes it kills them. You know, it's just, it's hard. That's the hard part of life.
Yeah. Getting out of the way, watching it happen, knowing you can't stop it, that it's their experience. And You just have to witness it. That's a choice too, though. 100%. Right? Witnessing it or...
It is a choice. It is.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
Yeah. What's your Enneagram number? Because when we talk about that, Lauren is a 7. And what were the characteristics of looking at something head on or not, Lauren?
I don't remember that one specific. I know I wouldn't be surprised if Julie is a 7 too.
I'm a 7. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what she's been saying this whole episode, I'm literally quiet because I'm like, it's like she's describing me. I mean, the empathy, the like, you know, so yeah. Worried about not necessarily what people think, but like their happiness. You're, you know, just care a lot.
Yes. I'm definitely not worried about what people think. I'm definitely worried about people.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And their happiness. I want them to like find what I have found.
Well, that's a really, that's a beautiful thing. And that's just makes you such a lovely human. I did want to ask you, I saw on your website that you're hosting a self-esteem workshop for tweens, which I think is so incredible. Can you tell me a little bit about what that looks like? Like I saw what's listed on the workshop, but you know what you say to these tweens, especially since you have one?
I let them talk a lot. I'm there as a guide. So I started doing the tween workshops 5 years ago as well. And I did it more for like, I knew my daughter was going to be a tween soon. And I wanted her and her friends and other friends of mine, kids to be a part of it. And it just grew. But you guys, it is so awesome. The last one I had a couple weeks ago, I had like my daughter's, one of her hip hop teachers come in and teach. It was like maybe 18 to 20 girls, all between the ages of 10 and 12. And some came alone without friends. And these were like the quiet ones who ended up, they get the most out of it. They're amazing. And then other groups and like clickies, like my daughter and her friends who, but Sadie's definitely a helper. Like she loves being a part of it. And we talk about feelings. We meditate. We do breathing techniques. We do workshops like I do empowerment workshops like I do with the woman, and we move, whether it's pound, yoga. The hip hop was by far the best. They all loved it. It was awesome. Like it was so awesome. I wanted to join in and they were like playing like music I love and it was just great. But you know, it's what I had needed at that time. So I'm just really, they leave there. The messages I get from the parents and the kids themselves, they love it. And again, it's being in community, sharing. If you heard what they share in front of each other, they sound like adults. They're actually smarter. It's crazy. I'm like, oh my gosh, like their feelings, like they tell you. And it just fills me up. It's just, it's unbelievable.
I love it. It's such a great idea. And I'm sure
so good.
You learn so much, especially, yeah,
I do.
It makes you aware of what
I do.
Your daughter is feeling, but that's so great.
Yeah, social media, phones, you know, the feeling less than because you're not being invited. You know, the same things we dealt with, being thin, like when we were, you know what I mean? Like looking a certain way, being pretty. And when I have them affirm each other and compliment each other, the first thing they say to each other, they have to do it to the person to the right. And the first thing they always say is, you're so pretty. Like all of them, like, it's so fun. Or you're so cute. Or you dress so good. Like it's obviously physical, about their physical first, because they're at that age where, and then it goes more to like, you're a good person and I like your vibe and your energy. And like, it's just like so cute.
That's so
I love
great.
It.
Do you talk about, let's not enforce the physicality, let's go deep and let's be in emotions? I mean, I know that's where they're at, right? But
yeah, absolutely. I never talk about physical appearance in front of my daughter ever. Like working out to her is working out for your mind and just staying healthy. It's not about aesthetics, you know, it's about, and she's like, she's a dancer. She says it's her medicine and that's how she feels great is like, it's the same thing. So, I mean, it's just, it's cool.
You feel that way about orgasms, right, Lauren? We're going to be talking about sex soon. And she's like,
I love it. Oh, I can't wait to listen.
You're just over there.
That really threw me through a loop.
So she seems like she's in thought.
Oh, yeah, she's a thinker.
I hope I didn't make you speechless, Lauren.
No, although Alexis did. Now I'm thinking about orgasms. No, I was just thinking how I wish there had been something like that that I went to when I was a tween or teen. Yeah. And I'm just processing because my teen years are very vivid to me. I really remember my feelings. Remember the, you know, the body, the comparison, the body image issues, the like waiting for my thing to arrive, you know, having friends that like the, you know, that would be really good at sports or really, really good at school or really artistic. And I was always like a B student. I was good at art. I was like good at sports, but I wasn't like, I kept waiting for my thing and being so jealous that it felt like everybody else around me had a thing. So anyway, so I was just thinking about just how beneficial a workshop like that would have been. Schools should have them. They should make, you know, that should be a thing that you do once a semester.
Totally. I've done it, represented, like schools have come to me and I've gone in and like, you know, I've talked and done a few things locally, but they need to do it more. And that kind of stuff, I don't charge, like I, you know, if I go into a school or a recovery center or a sober house or something, like that's me giving back. And like, they need it so bad, you guys. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Like this day and age with the kids, like, I'm telling you, like the phones and all that. I know we all say it, but it is so true. The first things they say is everyone else has a phone but me. Or, you know, I saw the girls have a sleepover on Snapchat and I wasn't invited. Why wasn't I invited? Mm-hmm. And like, we used to feel left out at times, obviously, when we were kids, but we didn't visually see it.
Right.
And it's like in their face. And, you know, it's just, it's crazy. They need this. And I'm happy to be able to, you know, create the space for them.
I didn't even think about that, but that's such a good point. Like, it's kind of like when you're a kid and you see a scary movie for the first time and you're seeing the scary movie, then it's, you know, it's haunting you and you've thought of, you know, you can't stop thinking about it for a week. You continue to be scared. So seeing the people leaving you out and having that visual, I would imagine would be kind of the same thing. You just can't, you know, you can't unsee it. You just keep thinking about it and picturing, you
know you do.
This picture of these people having sleepover without you in your mind, as opposed to when we were growing up and you heard about it, I feel like it'd be easier to push it out of your brain.
Yeah, or carpooling, you know, to Pilates and being left out and then having to see those people.
No, but she wanted to be asked. She wanted to be invited.
I just didn't want to watch it happen, you know, like you're saying. So tell our listeners what your retreats are like, how they can get on board, whether they're local or not local, if they wanted to make a drive, make a weekend of it, how can people be involved with the Hope Experience?
Many local ones a year. I mean, I used to do more. I went to Italy last summer, either May or July of 2025. We're going to the Azores Islands. It's my business, but it's a fun
take
business.
Us through the weekend. So we show up for the retreat.
Yeah. So they can find, you know, on my web, on Instagram, the Hope events, they sell out really quick. We've been fortunate to be able to sell them out quick. You know, if I could offer more, but you know, my kids play sports and I don't want to miss that kind of stuff. So I've slowed down a bit, but I'm able to, like, the local ones are cool because I can come home, you know, at night and like go to their sports. I mean, I've had, you know, retreats where other wellness practitioner will teach yoga for me in the morning and I'll be able to go to my son's football game and just go back, you know? So like, I've made it work. I mean, they're all chill. We tell people from the beginning, this is your time. You decide to sleep in your bed the entire weekend, you go for that. I had one, our Kenny Bungport, Maine. She was one of my best friends from high school who it was her dad's anniversary, a lot of stuff going on. We talk about it to this day. She stayed in bed all weekend. She showed up for dinner maybe once and like she was in a really bad mental state and that's what she needed. And she left feeling awesome. She's come back to other ones, but like it's your weekend. So we do like people to participate, but we don't judge if you don't. Like if you don't want to come to yoga in the morning and you want to sleep in, sleep in. We'll see you at breakfast or we won't see you at breakfast. If you want to go for walks during our workshops on the beach or go for a run or spend time by yourself, do you? We're cool with that. But when we start, usually Alice's house, you know, with Friday night, come in, we feed you guys really well, like nutritious foods, but yummy foods. We do an icebreaker. We introduce ourselves. We do card pulls. They're not tarot cards. They're, you know, cards for conversation. So like whether they're affirmations, how they resonate with you. Sometimes we'll do like the intentional words. We'll do mantras. We do Reiki meditation. the morning, you can do yoga. Again, we serve breakfast. We do free time in the afternoon hours where you can or journal, privately a book, lay on the beach, drive to Starbucks, whatever you want to do. And then we have an awesome dinner on Saturday mm-hmm. night. We do, people get closer at that point. So then people start to like chat with each other. Some stay up late, some go to bed early. Sunday morning, same thing, either yoga, whatever, movement of body, meditation sometimes. Oh, we have a massage therapist that comes in on Saturday afternoons through the night. And then
acupuncture? I saw that.
Sundays we have acupuncture come in before people leave. And yeah, so that's just, it's great. I leave feeling better. It's cool. But all our retreats are different. Like, you know, our Italy one was like unreal. Like, you know, it was, we had it all scheduled. But like, again, there were a few people who like didn't do certain things and we were cool. But everyone, that was like an unbelievable group of 14 women that like, they all are, they're like friends now and they live in different areas. Some like New Jersey, like, you know, we get people from other states and stuff too now, but like the bonds that come together, even ones that you're like, oh man, I don't know, like if they're going to dig this. They end up loving it. You know, it's pretty cool.
I am going to jump on one of these international ones, but I need to, my daughter starts driving this weekend. Mm-hmm. I know. So I have to just make sure that.
Oh my God. I can't believe how old your children are. Your children are young.
Yeah. They're 4 and 6. So, but yeah.
Yeah. She'll cook yoga and sound healing
and
stuff.
I don't like yoga. I'm not going to lie. I tried.
You're Pilates. You guys love Pilates. Yeah. Whatever it is, fine.
Yeah. But I'm not doing yoga. I tried. I tried for a full year.
Yeah. You have any more questions, Lauren, before we get to end of episode questions? Anything you're curious about?
I'm thinking.
I know. I see that.
There was something I was going to ask. So obviously going into the institution was, as you said, was your choice. But there was no, like, what was your relationship like with your parents? Like, can you just talk to me a little bit or share a little bit about that? Like, that must have been really hard for them, obviously, you being there. I can't imagine as a parent. I keep thinking that just must have been devastating. And then I just feel like, you know, there must have been some awkwardness when you came out just because everyone's trying to get their footing or their bearings or they don't know what's triggering or, you know. So what was that like with them?
My relationship with them has always been amazing. However, they didn't like choices that I was making and they had had enough. So they were always there for me, no matter what, still to this day. And again, the personality wise, my dad, I'm like him, empath, he worries, amazing, amazing human. It crushed his soul. I won't reveal his info, but it did a lot to him. My mom is tough as nails, loving. But she is tough as nails. And yes, she was sad and it hurt her, but like she's better at the tough love piece. You know, she's better at like, you got to do it or you don't. And this will be the repercussion of you not doing it. I'm not going to watch you slowly kill yourself anymore. The gig is up. We know what you're doing. Where my dad was more, he was very sad. They both were sad, but he was very, very sad. Very hard for him. Still at 78, he's like that. He's a worry wart. He's so loving and empathetic and wonderful.
And your brothers?
My brothers are great. They are very supportive. They're older. So I was the youngest. One is 9 years older than me. The other is 4. Their personalities, my oldest is like very successful. They're both successful, but he is more like everything is great. I love the tone of your voice, Jules. Like, you're doing great. Where my middle one is awesome and more empathetic to a fault, probably. Wonderful guy. But, you know, we all have our stuff and we're super close. But, you know, they're married. And when they get married, they have their lives. And, like, they're there for me if I need it. But I'm independent. They're always there for me when I needed them. But I try not to bother people too much. I was always that way. However, my oldest did take me in. I forgot about that part. I lived there the last 4 months when I ended that wedding and moved out of the house with my fiance at the time. I moved in with my oldest brother and his wife and twins that were 2 at the time. So 18 years ago. And they put me up in their home in Cohasset. And yeah, they were there for me. So And then as soon as I got out of the hospital, they're like, peace out. I ended up getting my own condo and lived by myself. And they're like, you're not coming back. Like, that was enough. Thank you.
You're also one of the lucky ones that get to see the ocean every day, living by the ocean.
I can see it right now.
Jealous.
Yeah. Can you explain what that does for your soul?
Oh my gosh. It's like one of the biggest luxuries for my soul. It's what fills me up. I have been around ocean my whole life. And the only two places I can fully relax and chill out is the beach and the stylist chair. I like literally can just chill. And the beach, even as a child, it just fills me up. And I can just go and sit there. When I leave for work, I leave at like 4:30, well, 4:45 in the morning. And in the winter, the ocean's right there. So, you know, the sun's coming up a lot of times. I'll stop. I take pictures. I'm like, you look through my phone. It's like every sunrise and sunset, like possible. Yeah. Like I'm a psycho. I'm like, just
even your stories.
This.
I love
feel
it.
This. I'm just an ocean girl. I just am. I am. I'm a nature girl. Because when I got sober, the first thing that I can say is the first time I heard the birds chirp and looked and saw the flowers and saw the beauty in the ocean, that was the first time in years that I noticed that. And I was blown away. Oh my God, I've been living in such a haze for so long. So I told myself I would connect to nature on a daily basis. I didn't this weekend. Maybe that's why I was depressed, but it was so cold here. I was like, screw that. I'm staying in my bed. But like most days I am either sitting on that beach right there, taking photos or just breathing for, even if it's like 3 minutes, you guys, sometimes I keep my car running and I'll just like sit there.
Yeah. I'm the same exact way. It feels good.
I need a lot. I need a lot to feel good. Like I need to immerse myself in a lot of stuff and I've learned what it is and I do
it. I think it's okay to say I need a lot, but let me also say, you give a lot.
I do. I give a lot, yeah.
So it's okay to take a lot for yourself, for what you need.
I'm trying to remind myself that, you know.
All right. Do you want to start with the end of episode questions, Lauren?
What is something you're prioritizing this year?
Rest and connection. I always like to connect with my kids, but like really connecting with them. You know, I've worked so hard and I've had to work really hard the past couple of years. And I decided to take Wednesday mornings off so that I can drive my son to school. And because I spend a lot of time driving my daughter to dance. So we have that one-on-one time where Jeff is more like drives Carter to like, you know, his practices and stuff. And it's like, he knows now. It's only been a month. And he's like, Wednesday morning, mom, like, you're going to get me a donut. And we're going to, like, we listen to Whitney Houston, you guys, blasting.
I
love
it.
And he knows all the songs. Because I'm obsessed with Whitney Houston. And, like, I have nothing. And he, like, screams, you guys, it, like, fills me up. He was like, it is the cutest thing. And, like, he looks forward to that. So this year, I am literally making sure, because I know I'm going to blink my eyes and they're going to be out of this house. And I'm going to be like, what the F was I doing working my ass off? And not that I ever miss anything of theirs because I make sure I don't. But like, is my head always there? No. And I know it's not always going to be there because I do own two businesses. I do have a busy life. But like, I want to make sure this year that like I am there because they really need me right now for so many reasons. And that's my biggest. This year is about my kids and about resting more.
Well, then
let's see if I do the rest, but you know.
So then what are you no longer available for?
Poopy people that suck the life out of me. There's not many of those. There aren't. I've been fortunate to be around good
people.
But I definitely choose my time more wisely on like phone conversations. Yeah. And you know, if people aren't doing the right thing and they're blowing smoke up, you know, I am there to a point and then I move on because I can't, again, change anybody else. I can just, you know, be a sounding board and like guide them in the direction to do the right thing and they can do the rest. But so I think just, you know, boundaries, my gosh, I need those.
Yeah. How do you know though? So, how do you know that this person's not doing the right thing or they don't have the right intentions and I need to throw up a boundary? How do you know?
I'm really good at figuring people out quickly. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes I allow them to take advantage of that with me. Because again, I do worry about, you know, health and physical health and mental well-being. And, but I have to, you know, the older I get, I realize I can't change others. And it's a painful part of, you know, being who I am, but like, I can't.
Yeah.
So boundaries are important. And I just have to remember that.
Well, besides the Whitney Houston, which I love, do you have an anthem song, or is there a song that every time you hear it, it just brings you so much joy, can't stop dancing type of thing?
There's a few. They're all silly too. Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody. Mariah Carey. Yeah. Any hip hop, like, you know, I grew up in high school in the early 90s. So like hip hop, Snoop Dogg,
yeah.
Like, but I also, I mean, I love all different types of music, but obviously I'm in a gym setting. So like, oh, do you remember?
That is one of my favorites. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I love that song. Maybe I didn't use it. I love that song. I was born in September too. September, I love like the weather and like, I just, even in December when I'm singing September, I love it.
Like, I actually think, so if I was single, I think about this. If I was single, what would be like the things I would ask someone I was dating to know if they were the right person? If I said that song and they showed no signs of movement, no, we would not continue dating. Like there's something wrong with you if you're not shaking your ass to that song. Yes, I truly believe it. If not, like a little of this, like how can you not?
Yes.
How can you not?
Oh, yeah. I do that all day. Yeah. Like music that comes on, like I love music. I do. I love music. I love dancing. I love that. Except when I first got sober, sober dancing was tough the first few weddings, I have to admit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, let me deviate from these questions I wanted to ask you. When you go on your retreats and women are having, you know, they're consuming whatever on the retreats, is that difficult for you, or do women not partake?
Oh, no, they do. Certain ones they don't, just because it's just, I mean, they can do whatever they want. I had one that was like a booze fest, and most of them are not like that. This was such a random one. It was like my first Kenny Bunkport retreat. There was like 20 something women. They were from all times of my life, you guys.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Like girls that were younger than me growing up in like elementary school, like, you know, middle school, high school, college, like now. It was insane. And like a couple of them had a little bit of problems with each other. I mean, it was freaking weird, but it was awesome. The weekend was very intense, but the first night some people got loaded. And there has been ones that women with not even sober retreats, like our Savannah one, we had a woman who, I can't even get into it, but she was hammered at like 9 a.m. in workshops. She had an alcohol problem and she was like locked in a room the rest of the, I mean, that doesn't happen often on retreats, but we've had a few things. Now that I look back, we've had a few things happen. Mm-hmm. And safety wise, like we feel responsible. Right. So like we had to like really take action, and like she missed her flight back, and like, you know, pretty sad. Oh my God. Like, you know, drank, some didn't. We had chefs there. I mean, I'm fortunate where like people drinking does not bother me. I'm around it. Like my friends drink, you know, some don't, some do. I've been fortunate that that's never bothered me at all. Like I don't mind when people drink, as long as they're not assholes, like, you know.
Right.
What are you reading, watching, or listening to right now?
So right now I'm actually in the process of reading an empowerment book, self-help book it's like a daily, both morning reading and night reading, but it's long. So it's actually like a book, and I'm into self-help right now. So I need as much help as I get. So I read that in the morning and then at night. So I'm reading that. And then I don't watch a ton of TV because I get up so early and then I have like kids' sports and stuff, but I do like Southern Charm, like on Bravo. Like I love that show. So I watched a marathon of that this past Saturday. And then when I had this guy watched that. So like, I am trying to incorporate, I used to love like, you know, Netflix during the pandemic. I did watch TV then. And I really like to like do that every once in a while. But again, my life is super, you know, kid fueled right now. And then I sleep when I can. So, but I know you guys, I love listening to the stuff that you guys, I have like lists of things I need to be watching and reading and
You know, JT on Southern Charm has an Airbnb. I started following him and I sent it to Lauren. I was like, girls trip?
No way. Oh, no way. I went to Charleston alone a couple of years ago. I went alone for 3 days. And I had like an interview thing there for the Hope Experience. And I ended up staying for 3 days by myself and like went to dinner alone, lunch, walked around. It was in March. Mm. Yeah. A couple of years ago. It was awesome. Traveling it's alone.
Good. Mm.
It's good.
This is a new question. And you did kind of answer it a little when you talked about, you know, just sitting in your car looking at the ocean. But what is your most treasured personal ritual?
I think my alone solo, this is all right. Not this past summer, the summer before when I was going through really tough stuff and the start of my relationship issues, I would get up because I have to work early anyways. I would get up at 4:30 in the morning during the summer. I'd go to the beach, watch the sunrise, and I was training for, I would do my runs. I'd listen to or music or I'd listen to Crazy Miles. And I went to this headspace that's just so good. So good. So clear. Clarity. I love having clarity.
Mm. That's what your latest luxury was. So,
yeah.
I have more luxuries that I like. Okay. I love manicures and pedicures and facials and massages. And I mean, not all the time. I always get my nails done. And I try to get facials often.
And you always wear earrings.
I always wear earrings, always. Yeah. And I'm always usually in fitness stuff. So I look dorky with beautiful earrings and like, you know, fitness stuff. But yeah. So I do love that kind of stuff.
What does it mean to you to have a well-lived life?
To have a well-lived life is the biggest thing, obviously, to continue on my road of recovery. And the biggest thing I want to be remembered by people is my kindness. So I think just living true to myself and doing the next right thing always, because there were times I didn't. And that's what makes me feel good.
What's the right thing for you these days?
The right thing for me is to be a good mom in person and to not let my feelings and emotions get in the way of other people's stuff. And that's what I'm talking about, like presently what's going on, like no matter what, even though things affect me negatively at times, be strong enough to be a good person and to never cut anybody else down and just be a good supportive human. To all people, everybody that deserves it. If you don't deserve it, then whatever. I'm not hanging with you anyways, but you know.
No, exactly. Yeah. Tell everyone how to find you, all the ways to connect with you.
So you can connect with me on Instagram at The Hope Experience. You can connect with me on Facebook. I'm more on Instagram than Facebook. I love Insta. Or what else? My website, which is hopeexperienceretreats.com, I believe. Something like that. You can Google me. Julie Armstrong, The Hope Experience. But mostly Instagram. That's been my go-to.
Great. Thank you for spending your day off with us.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I loved it. I love you. And I was so glad to like, I love just watching you guys and seeing what you're doing.
If any of our conversation resonated with you, feel free to reach out via email at info@luxuriesforyoursoul.com.
We would love it if you showed your support for the show with a 5-star review or a social media share so more people find these conversations and have the opportunity to hear from our guests.
Also, there are several ways to connect with us outside of the podcast. If you are searching for a personal power object, a good luck charm, or a talisman to shield yourself, I've got you covered.
If you have a small business or incubating an idea, you can work with me one-on-one for my consulting service. When it comes to design, branding, marketing, and consistency, we all have our blind spots. Yet sometimes we want someone to listen to our ideas or share valuable insights. Contact me if you would benefit from a fresh set of eyes or a brainstorming partner.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button to continue receiving all the luxuries for your soul.